Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 466, ChatGPT Pitches Board Games. We like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we are back and we are joined at the table this week by AI. Hey AI, how you doing?
Random gobbledygook.
There you go.
I'm doing quite well because people often are doing well when they're in the presence of others on a podcast.
Ah, good to hear, good to hear. So, do you have a funny anecdote, AI?
Do I have a funny anecdote, AI? Do you have a funny anecdote?
For a podcast.
Yep, this is fun to listen to. All right, so I was in a grocery store the other day, minding my own business in the produce section, when I saw this little boy, maybe about 4 or 5 years old, with his mom. He was intensely studying a bunch of bananas, like he was trying to crack some secret code. After a few moments, he turns to his mom with the most serious expression and says, "Mom, we need to find the ruler. These bananas are not regulation size." His mom and I couldn't help but burst out laughing. I mean, this kid was dead serious, as if there's a banana size committee somewhere setting standards. I couldn't resist, so I leaned in and said, "Yeah, and watch out for those rebellious cucumbers on aisle 3. The mom and I shared a good laugh, and the little boy just looked at us like we were the ones who were bananas. But hey, you never know when you might need a ruler for those non-regulation fruits, right? My soul just died a little.
Well, I guess humor is safe from AI.
That's the most boring thing I've ever read in my entire life.
And you read rule books for a living.
I do, yeah. Like, this is what I tell my students all the time. Like, if you're going to cheat, ChatGPT is just immensely boring. It's dull. Yeah. It's lame. I'm going to know you cheated because of how boring it is. You are more interesting person than this machine.
Yeah. So, nonetheless, ChatGPT joining the podcast for this episode because we thought, of course, as AI is getting involved in visuals in board gaming, it's getting involved in rule books in board gaming, why not have ChatGPT pitch some board games to us?
Yeah. Well, just accelerate this. Just go all the way. ChatGPT replace all of us with nice, boring nonsense. It's actually not all nonsense, which is interesting. So it should be fun.
Yeah. So we'll have some really fun pitches from ChatGPT about board games, and then you and I out there will try to figure out which designer it's stealing from, pretty much.
Yeah. What prompt did Anthony put in to get this idea?
There you go. Anthony, before we get into all the fun that's going to be our feature review, featured by ChatGPT, a lot of things have been going out in the whole world of geek and movies and television and fun stuff. Did you catch the Oscars recently?
Yeah. I don't normally watch the Oscars, but my son, who's very much into movies the last couple of years, insisted. So when I got home yesterday, because I was up in New Jersey visiting you all, we played some games over the weekend, which was awesome.
Yeah, buddy.
I got home and the Oscars were on. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we're watching this year. And the thing with award shows is if I start watching it, I have to finish it. Yeah. Like, well, now that I've started, I want to know the big award because I've spent my time on the small awards. So I did watch it. I watched it in its entirety. It's probably like the first time in like 15 years I did that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch it until I had heard that Godzilla Minus Zero won a big award. And I was like, now I'm in. Now I'm in to watch the rest of this.
And then the same movie won the rest of the awards the rest of the night.
I mean, in the perfect world, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully it was Godzilla, but no, Oppenheimer swept so many things, although Poor Things, Emma Stone won for Best Actress, Cillian Murphy for Best Actor, and of course Christopher Nolan for Best Director, because he's kind of the new Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the guy now these days.
And it's kind of the same arc too, where he made all these like blockbustery type things and like geeky adjacent stuff, and then he finally made his like magnum opus about a serious thing in history, and he won his Oscar for it, similar to Spielberg, who won for Schindler's List after almost 20 years of making movies at that point. So it's crazy. I honestly thought that Nolan had won before because he's made so many good movies, but he's only been nominated like twice.
It's crazy.
I mean, he's been nominated 8 times. I think a lot of those times were like screenplays and stuff.
Sure.
So it's cool. It was fun to see them up there. His wife is his producer, so they went up together, and it's
great
to see them. And he's always been such an amazing part of like pushing forward the quality of nerdy entertainment. You know, science fiction and fantasy and comic book stuff has all been elevated because he's been so involved in it.
Sure.
So since I saw Memento back in high school, I was like, this guy knows what he's doing.
I mean, he changed the industry. His tone, his style is certainly in the zeitgeist. A lot of people have been pulling it from it for many years, just like Lucas back in the day.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, it was an impressive little sweep there. But obviously one of the big categories that we like so much, because, again, it's geeky, best animated film.
Yeah, this was like two juggernauts going up against it, and I don't think anybody knew who was going to win. But at the end of the day, Miyazaki got his kind of. He says it's his last movie. Maybe it is.
Yeah,
but then he keeps coming back and doing more. But he's quite old, so he probably is his last movie. The Boy and the Heron beat out Spider-Man.
Spider-Man 2, man. That was painful. Yeah. I mean, I think the comment from, I'm not sure who exactly, but from the Spider-Man movie, was if you're going to get beat, you want to get beat by the GOAT.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I could take the loss on that.
Yeah, it wasn't like some random Disney schlock. It was like, probably, we have not seen this movie. I don't know if it's any good. I mean, I'm sure it's good, but I don't know how good it is. I have not seen The Boy and the Heron yet. But almost certainly a masterpiece, because that's what he makes, his masterpieces. So. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised, although that Spider-Man movie, Across the Spider-Verse, is the best animated movie I think I've ever seen. So, at least from a fun perspective. There's a lot of really good animated movies that make me sad, that are amazing. Grave of the Fireflies, Iron Giant.
Sure.
Half of Miyazaki's movies, like, they're brilliant, but Across the Spider-Verse was just, like, such a spectacle.
Yeah, it blew me away in theaters, and I was not expecting it, and I was tremendously surprised and thrilled by it, and I've watched it several times afterwards, and I did like the first movie a lot. Second one was incredible, and now we have to wait for the third movie, which, again, hopefully they stick the landing, but that accomplishment, that artwork, that editing, the directing, the voice acting as well. I mean, it was a real amazing experience. It's, again, it's what cinema should be. And that was one of those kind of experiential, kind of, you know, new world kind of movies. Not just like, oh, that was a very good animated movie. That was another DC great movie out there, or a Marvel so-and-so. It's like, no. It transcended the genre in which it was, and the animation style, the medium, and everything else. Like, pretty profound. I was really hit by that.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I guess, you know, for, I guess, more or less, I mean, Godzilla 2, Godzilla minus
one
there. Well, I'm thinking minus one, but also minus color.
Which is the one I saw.
Like, so that was in the black and white, was really amazing. And I was just, again, taken back to not just like, oh, it was nostalgic. It was like when I was a child watching Godzilla movies. But what an amazing movie. What amazing special effects and a great story. Please see the movie, ideally in black and white, because it does lend something to the horror of the monster. And Godzilla is scary in this because there's a really good story behind it. It's not like any of the other Godzilla movies where like the humans are like, can you all leave so we can see Godzilla? The story is actually pretty profound. So it was very good. And I guess, obviously, next year, Anthony, we'll be talking about Dune 2.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be winning some awards for something. Who knows what? Probably visual effects, I would imagine.
Maybe director.
Maybe director. I hope so. Yeah, Dune 2 is amazing. It's Dune 1, part 1. I did my top 10 movies of all time over on the Patreon not too long ago, and Dune part 1 is on that list.
Wow.
It's an incredible film, and just it's amazing on its own merits, but just like to be able to transfer what comes in that book in such a way, and obviously with his own vision, because there's a lot of things that change and have to change to make that a viable, filmable story.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it was amazing. And so going into Dune 2, I had very high expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, man, there's so much stuff in the second half of that book. Some of it's amazing. Some of it's ridiculous. Some of it's disgusting. Like,
yeah,
what are we going to get? What mix of things? And we got amazing, ridiculous, and sometimes disgusting in that Dune part two. And in my view, definitely nailed the landing.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. I thought it was spectacular. Production was top notch. The visuals, the sound, it told a great story. I think it delved deep into a lot of the areas that the book really flushes out, and the book's quite large. So I was glad to see a lot of, and again, I don't want to give any spoilers or anything away from the movie, so I won't, you know, but they really put the conflict front and center. They really did put the relationships front and center. And I thought that was the essential parts of the movie. So I'm excited for the third one. I love to see him just cap this off. They keep talking about it's not officially approved yet, but how's that not a thing?
I mean, it will be. The movie is doing really well domestically, mm-hmm. but it's doing incredible overseas. It's making so much money overseas. So it seems like it's going to be profitable. And for a movie this big, when movies cost this much to make and promote, when they're profitable, that means they made $750 million. So that's probably a good sign. But the guy who runs Warner Brothers is an interesting individual who makes weird decisions that are also interesting. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens there.
Excellent. Well, Anthony, that's what's going on out there. A lot of stuff happening with us. A little thing called Board Game Academics.
Yeah, a couple dual announcements here. I mean, last week we told y'all the journal was live. The journal is live.
It's live, folks.
It is still live. No, it's when we recorded last time, it had not quite gone up, but now it is up. It is definitely up. And when you listened last week, it was probably up.
Mm-hmm.
So boardgameacademics.com/issue-1. You can visit there or click on journal and go to issue one. And we have 9 articles from academics throughout the space talking about, you know, just amazing different things from game design to escape room usability to Warhammer 40K miniatures, sexism in the chess community, using tabletop RPGs in writing classrooms, like all just amazing different approaches to tabletop games and board games and everything in between. And that is live. So, you know, thank you to all of our, well, everybody. This was a huge communal effort. Definitely not just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our board of many people, our dozens of volunteers, our dozens of submitters, our, I think, 11 or 12 presenters we had at the conference last year, and our 9 final authors in the journal. Just an amazing journey over the last, like, 13 months getting this up.
And now there's a call to action, Anthony.
Yeah. So 2 days after that went up, the call for submissions for this year went up. So we want to do this every year. And so we have put out the call for submissions for the next journal, which is live now. It'll be up until April 7th. So if you have an idea of something that you would like to share with the world at the Board Game Academics Conference and or journal, please visit boardgameacademics.com/submissions and send us your proposal. You don't need a finished paper. You just need an abstract of your presentation topic, 250 words or so, and a bibliography of your research. So if you have something or you know anybody who does, please head on over, share it with the world. Our timeline for this, again, is it'll be up for about a month. Our conference is scheduled for the summer, at Dex Light, July 4th weekend. So we'll be letting everybody know if they are accepted before May 1st. So kind of a coming up quickly here. So if you have an idea, definitely let us take a look at it. And we would love to consider your work for the next journal for next year.
Yeah. And please share when you get to the table, when you meet with other gamers or wherever you happen to be, let them know that Board Game Academics Journal is out. And we would love for you to help us get the word out about the call for papers, because we want not just obviously the latest and the greatest, but we want the best. And we want to help the tabletop industry grow. And this scholarship does a lot for that. So, yep, Board Game Academics, check it out. But anyway, that's not the only thing. Board Gamers Anonymous will be at a convention. Long Island Tabletop. We went last year. We had a great time. We did 3 different events. We did a live podcast. We did a panel presentation on neurodiversity and gaming. And we did another great presentation on the practical applications of tabletop game in higher education. This year, we're doing 2 big presentations. One's going to be on leveling up your teaching board games is challenging. And you really do want to win over the people to get them to play these games and have a great experience. So we're going to have game masters, especially our friend Dave, the game master, and Anthony and several others, teach you about how to teach games and be better at it. And then on Sunday, we are going to be talking about leveling up your mental health. Tabletop gaming can do a lot for your mental health. And we're going to have a panel of professionals, psychologists there to talk about how to utilize tabletop gaming to make you feel awesome every day. Because board games are awesome, but they could be more awesome if they help you with your mental health.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Last year, we had a lot of fun. We did 3 presentations last year, and this year, we're coming at it again, and we're going to have a lot of interesting ideas. I'm particularly excited about sharing kind of some of these different teaching tactics because, like, we all have to teach games. Some of us avoid it and pass it off to their friend.
Sorry.
who does this professionally. They're like, yeah, you're good at teaching stuff. And I love it. I love teaching games, unless it gets too late, and then I'm sorry. I get cranky. But... But like, what goes into that? How do you prepare for that? How do you learn the game before you teach the game? How do you bring this to different types of people? What is the most important information to share? How do you approach different audiences in different ways? Like, I teach my kids games, I teach my students games, I teach my friends games. Those are all very different things. So it'll be fun to talk about and share what that looks like. And Long Island Tabletop, it's just a fantastic venue for all of it.
Yeah, we'll be there April 6th and 7th. We'll have tables there. We would love to meet you. We love to game with you. This is a great place to game as well. And it's an aviation museum, so it's a lot of fun and a place to be.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's finally everything that's happening with us. Anthony, what's happening with our friends out there? What's our question of the week?
All right. Question of the week this week is simple. What is the best thing you've ever purchased for your board game collection? Not a game. Ooh. Thing. Other thing. Although some people answered with a game, which fair. All right, so Michael Y2, recent new backer, because we're over on the Patreon. Again, if you are a Patreon backer, you can submit your answers here and be entered for a chance to win a game. Michael says, a large playmat that I can use to cover the table while we play games. It makes it easy to pick up and slide playing cards. Plus, dice rolls don't bounce so much. So,
makes sense.
Highly agree. I don't have one, but every time I play on a mat, I'm always like, oh, this is nice. I should just have one of these on the table all the time. although I do have cats, so just be covered in hair eventually. Charlie says, easy answer is a dedicated shelf. My collection used to be integrated with books and other knickknacks, but it wasn't working well as I added in more to the collection. Yeah, just having one place that's just games, 100%. Got to do that. Robert's going fancy. He says, a 3D printer.
We've made
some organizers that have made it much easier to set up games. It's really nice when you can create something that holds the pieces while playing and use the same thing to pack it up, but it also allows us to create things like card holders for general use. It's fun, if admittedly over the top purchase.
Gotcha.
That's probably the best, but yeah, that's probably right. Ryan says, first thought would be playmats, as Michael said above, but to offer a different answer, I'd say some of my best purchases would be upgraded custom resources, which also include metal coins.
Ooh.
Absolutely. Drew says, level up raised table. The modular system creates extra space when needed. A platform I can set aside if I need to use our table underneath. And most importantly, raises about 6 inches to make sitting or standing reasonable while playing. A key back saver for long sessions.
Nice.
I love the tables that change. I have a standing desk that's motorized, goes up and down in my office. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because sometimes I want to lean back and put my feet up on it. It goes way low. Sometimes I want to stand up and just be like proper posture. It goes way high.
Sure.
Most of the time I'm sitting here, like right now, it's in the middle. So a game table like that would be amazing. So lots of good answers there. Over on the Facebook as well, of course, we have several people answer the question there. Jeremiah says metal coins. Eric says a big Viking mat for my table. Ashley says board game backpack. Love me a good board game backpack.
Yeah.
We have Walker says specifically a geek chic table.
Oh, sure, sure.
Just a nice fancy table. And then DJ says shelves, specifically the Better Home and Gardens cubes.
Oh, nice.
So lots of good answers. I think for me, it's tough. I was very excited when I bought my first set of like Kalax.
Yeah.
Like I had a lot of games at that point already and they were just like on random things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all of a sudden it looked all nice and organized. And, like,
yeah. I think that's a big part of collecting board games. Or if you're a big fan of you just even playing them, just having them physically available in some sort of organized structure is excellent. And Kalex has been the superstar of this. I know there's other versions of this. There's other ways in which you can kind of organize your collection, but this is a very good standard square, very inexpensive considering the cost of certain things. I used to organize everything on like wireframe shelving, and that was a problem because you're going to beat the game up a little bit, even if, and I did have pads down and stuff, but still, nonetheless, you can't avoid that. This is good. I know how many fit in it. They could fit in vertical or horizontal. They typically fit most, if not all, games out there, and they look better than what they're made of. Mm. And what they're made of is surprisingly light and movable. Because I've had to do some crazy things with putting them on top of each other and swinging them across the room, and they're very light. So they've always been great.
Yeah, 100%. All right. So thanks, everybody, who posted answers to the question. This week, we are picking a winner. Michael Y2, playmats are the way to go. Yeah. there was no like best answer this week, I will say. So we did pick one at random just because so many of these are good answers, and it really is a very personal thing. So
sure.
I'm not saying Michael's answer is better than anybody else's because I think I agree with all of them.
Yeah, of course.
Except maybe Robert because I can't afford a 3D printer, but the rest sound great.
I would love a 3D printer. I think it's from what I've seen, and I'm sure there's so much better ones out there, but what I've seen from friends, like it's not there yet where you could just like easily print things out. It takes a little more knowledge than I'm really looking to invest at this moment. But one day I hope so, because there's a lot of great stuff out there, you know, and a lot of times things you could still pick up relatively inexpensive. So one of the things I also liked, I should mention, and I talked about this several times, is silicone pinch bowls.
Oh my gosh.
Those little Japanese bowls. It just seems it's lifted up from the table a little bit. I used to do silicone cupcake things, but there was a lot of problems with those. These are stiff, but they're flexible and they're high enough out. I mean, they're meant for like pinching into the bowl and pulling things out. So that has replaced my cupcakes holders. and then I guess way back in the day, which I would not recommend now, but way back in the day, Anthony, do you remember Plano boxes?
I remember you shouting the good word of Plano.
Plano's good. I still have my Planos for like my, you know, Star Wars tack wing and all that other kind of plastic miniature stuff. It does do a good job to help organize.
Yeah, no, definitely. I used it for exactly the same stuff, like X-Wing and some miniature games.
Yes, exactly. Well, again, thank you all for, you know, your feedback. Again, our social media is everywhere. Definitely go out there, hit us up. Hit us up on Rating the Podcast. Hit us up on BoardGamersAnonymous.com. You can email us there. And as we mentioned before, BoardGameAcademics.com. All right, everyone, let's get on to the show. So, Anthony, let's talk games that we want to get to the table out there. What's your acquisition disorder this week?
All right. So for me, this was it was teased early. Uh-huh. I think it was Paul Grogan who had like a stream coming up where he was like, we're going to announce a new Mage Knight thing. So I already knew what my acquisition disorder was going to be, but the details didn't come out
sure
until a little bit later. So there is a new expansion for Mage Knight coming out, the Apocalypse Dragon. It is scheduled for next year. It's not coming out this year. And we got a lot of advance notice and just a little bit of information. So some background here. Mage Knight is a game from 2011. Mage Knight, the board game, I should say, from Vlada Shivatul, one of the all-time great designers. And it's based on, like, I think it was like a little figure clicks type of thing, mm-hmm. old miniature type game, and then they made a board game out of it. Nobody remembers the figure clicks type of game, but Mage Knight, the board game, has gone on to become essentially one of the best all-time solo games. It plays 1-4. You should never play with 3 or 4 people. Ever. The game is, like, forever long if you play with a full player count. I've played with 2 several times, and it's fun. You work together. But 3-4 players, way too long. Out of, like, the 50 or 60 plays I have of this game, 49 or 59 of them are solo. And that's really what it is. That's what people want for this game. So, over the years, it has released, I think, 3 expansions. The Ultimate Edition of the game has basically everything in the box. So, this is, like, a big $140, $150 version of the game that comes with the Lost Legion, which is the big expansion that has all the extra solo stuff. Krang, which is, like, a little character expansion, and Shades of Tesla, which is, like, an in-between expansion. Lots of good content. It's almost an infinite sandbox of stuff to do. It's a adventure type game, but not in the way you're used to, where you roll dice and kind of wander around a map. Instead, it's a deck building game where you are curating the spells and abilities and different things that your Mage Knight can do and building it up and leveling them up, literally leveling them up with like XP on a chart, mm-hmm. And going through this kind of growing world on the map and exploring and defeating these different things up to the point where you're trying to like take down entire cities. So you start out as kind of like this fledgling Mage Knight and you grow into this like all-powerful god who's like leveling cities at the end of the game. And it's an amazing experience. If you like puzzly games, if you like working your way through these complex, convoluted opportunities and like sitting there and thinking like, I have all these cards and all these options and all these abilities and all these locations that can go, what is the most efficient way to do this in a way that's going to let me blow up the most stuff, right? That's what it is. So it's not for everybody at all, right? But the type of people who like to play solo games, who sit down and think through complex puzzles for a long period of time, it is like one of the best versions of that. And so we get a new expansion, which is admittedly light on details right now. It is not designed by Vlada Shivatul. It's actually designed by Phil Pettifer, who has worked on the other stuff. So Pettifer was a co-designer with Paul Grogan on the Krang character expansion. Again, not Vlada Shivatul. And also on the Shades of Tesla expansion. So the last two expansions were not Shivatul. They were Pettifer and Grogan, and this one is just Pettifer. And it's going to be, you get a new character, Coral, who is trying to take down the Apocalypse cult. So you are going to have to take down the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse, and it's not just horsemen, there's also a dragon of the apocalypse.
Oh, man. So
you're going big. So we get new tiles, new locations, new challenges. It seems like a solid, bigger box expansion with a lot of new content. So like the people who've been playing Mage Knight for 10 years at this point, 15 years, this is for you. Lots of stuff. Everybody else out there who's like, I don't know if I'll ever play that. Well, this isn't for you, but just know that I'm excited. I am very excited. So Mage Knight, the Apocalypse Dragon, who knows when it's coming out, sometimes next year, but I'm psyched for it.
That's excellent. It's nice to see that it's coming back and it seems like it's really fleshed out this time.
Yeah. And you know, people are excited. It jumped to number one on the hotness, mm-hmm. you know, an expansion for a 14-year-old game that's coming out next year. People are like, oh my gosh.
And you could play it with the original base game, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait a minute. You can do that? You don't have to, like, reprint the first one in a super ultimate deluxe one, which negates everything you previously purchased?
Apparently.
What? Crazy. Since when?
The only concern people have is that WizKids has a habit of not doing great on expansion printing.
Mm.
The Krang expansion, which was the last expansion, didn't match the coloring of the earlier expansions and base set of the game. So if you bought the original game and you bought all the expansions that got the Krang stuff, you had to sleeve everything because the colorations on the back of the cards wasn't great. The Ultimate Edition fixes that because they're all printed at the same place. But now we have another new expansion. So people are like, fingers crossed, it comes out and it's not a terrible printing, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. Well, speaking of exciting, there was another big announcement. Not much on the detail side, but a big announcement. Mass Effect, the board game. Priority, Hagalaz. So this was announced, and again, it was announced alongside their designers, a person you may know and love, Eric Lang.
Ooh.
And Calvin Wong says Loon, who's also part of this as well. So what's really interesting about this is the information that they have out so far is that they know that they could overproduce this. They could make a massive game, a ton of miniatures, $150 massive box. But what they're saying right now is this game will cost well under $100.
Ooh, that's nice.
They're claiming it's going to be simpler and cheaper than most of these super big box games, but it's going to follow the events and stories of Mass Effect 3 with all the characters included. But they want this to be not just accessible for gamers like us, hardcore gamers, but I think more of the general public. And I think that's become Eric Lang's thing, you know, alongside with, I guess, Marvel United. I don't think it will be that light or that easy, of course. But these are going to be 32-millimeter pre-assembled plastic miniatures. And you're going to have the whole crew here, which is awesome. And it's going to be a board game, but again, in that RPG-style dungeon crawl that, I guess, of course, we've known and loved, that every video game seems to do things of that nature.
Yeah.
So they're looking at Q4, and it's going to be produced coming out of Asmodee. So Mass Effect fans, rejoice! It's going to be a board game. It's an Eric Lang game, so it's probably going to be good.
Here's hoping. Yeah, that'll be cool. It's been a while since I played Mass Effect. I don't think I ever finished that trilogy, but it's a cool world. It'll be interesting to see how they do it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they incorporate the different elements of that, and if it does play out, if there's more of a story and not just kind of, you know, on rails kind of dungeon crawl, hack and slash kind of thing. But it's possible. Look, I just love the fact that the companies understand, at least this company seems to understand, that they have been overproducing and overcharging for something that they could make a high quality thing at a more reasonable price. So, fingers crossed. Mass Effect, man. Mass Effect. All right, that's all the game.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That we want hit the table, let's talk about the games that did hit the table, and we'll let you know if those are games or a buy, and you should run out and pick those games up, or if those games are a play, and you should sit down and enjoy them, or if those games are a dodge, and you should avoid them, or in fact, those games are the dreaded burn, because ChatGPT, I don't know, did a thing, didn't work out, fell down, wasn't funny, and just please, just trust us, avoid it at all costs.
All right, so we both played this game a couple times. This is Wormspan. You might have heard of it.
What? Who? It's the Worms? It's an expansion for Wingspan?
No. That would be helpful to the owners of Wingspan. No. It's all new game. So this is a new game. It is not designed by Elizabeth Hargrave. It is designed by Connie Vogelman, who designed Apiary, the game I actually loved quite a bit. based on the mechanisms of Wingspan. Now, the language out of Stonemaier for this, and by the way, this is a review copy that we received, putting that out there, but the language around the game is, you know, it's inspired by Wingspan, but all different mechanisms. It's Wingspan like 1.75, okay? It has a lot of the same mechanisms. When I taught the game to a table full of people who had played Wingspan before, most of the things are like, yeah, just like this, yeah, like this, yeah, like this. There are like three or four important things that are different. And we're not going to review it based on that necessarily, but it's important to know that, because if you've played Wingspan a bunch and you're like, do I need a different version of this? The answer depends on a few things. So in the game, you are not a bird watcher. You're a dracologist. I guess a dragon watcher.
Okay.
So you got a little explorer, dude. You work for the Dragon Guild and you're going around and checking out these different caves where the dragons might live. So you have your three rows, just like Wingspan. You have your different slots, just like Wingspan. And you are trying to populate those spots with dragons that you have explored and seen as the explorer. So on your turn, you can do one of three things. And this is where it diverges a little bit, because each of those locations can house a dragon, same as Wingspan. But before you can put a dragon down, you need to put a cave down. So you have two types of cards now. And you have to excavate first. That's one of the actions, is to place a cave down so that you have a place to put your dragon. The other thing that's important and different here is that you don't have like the winnowing actions that you do in Wingspan, where like you have the certain number of action tokens and then you place those on the scoring markers and you have less actions as the game goes along. Instead, you have these scale tiles, coins, whatever you want to call them. They're like little silver coin-like things that you start each round with six of them. And you have to spend one for each action you take. So you probably have six actions per round. I say probably because there are some cards that require you to spend one of those tokens to play the card out as one of the resources to play the dragon. So you could have less actions if you want to play that dragon really bad. You could also have more actions because there are things in the game that allow you to get additional scale tokens. So you can have variable action counts, which is, again, different from Wingspan in a lot of ways, in the sense that you can, if you time it right and have the right combo going, you could take, I think I had a round in one of the games we played where I had 11 actions instead of six. So you can really compound things and do that, which is kind of cool. Second action is to entice the dragon. That's just to play your dragon out. You pay the resources, place the dragon down. If it has a playability, you play it. Otherwise, you move on. And the third option is to explore, where you take your little explorer guy and you send him along the path. And you activate that row, effectively. So he'll walk along. There's abilities between each dragon. And then sometimes on the dragon, if the dragon has an explore ability. And that's pretty much it, right? You go through four rounds. Each round has some scoring tile. Whoever has the most of it's going to get some points. And you have the end around abilities that you're going to activate. And at the end of the game, you see who has the most points. There are eggs. You put eggs on the dragon cards. That's very similar. There are endgame points on the cards, very similar. There is caching of resources, very similar. So like all the bones are there, but it's kind of the approach to the bones or how they come together. It's a little bit different. I don't think I like it more or less than Wingspan, to be perfectly honest. Wingspan has always been a play for me. I like it. If it's at the table, I will always say yes to playing it, but it's never a game I think to bring to play at game nights. I'm like, I'm good. You know, I'm not going to like put this out there as the game I want to play. So Wormspan isn't significantly different enough for me. I like the fact that you can ramp up your actions and abilities and get more out of the game, like take more turns if you're efficient with it. I like the cave mechanism to a degree. Sometimes it feels just like you have to complete these.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a little like filler action. You have to like you get more actions in the game, but there's more things you have to do to be able to accomplish stuff.
Sure.
Right? Like it balances out. But at the same time, you have all the same problems that you have in Wingspan. You have a big giant deck of cards.
Mm.
There's only three available to choose from. And if they're none of them are good for you, or if you end up with a hand of all cards that are all in the same row as you did in the last game we played.
Yeah, it was not fun.
Then what do? Nothing. You just have to kind of cycle through things. You waste a few actions.
You do.
And while someone else is building up a really crazy combo, and you're like, cool.
That must be that fun.
That looks fun. I wish I was doing that. So What I will say, though, is in the handful of plays we have now, I have not seen a broken combo yet.
Sure.
And I haven't really seen a crazy runaway score yet. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's gotten stomped, and nobody's gotten, like, skunked everybody.
Yes.
That's anecdotal. That doesn't mean the game doesn't have those options.
Yeah.
But it's not something that's so easy to do that it happened quickly. So I'm not comfortable saying the game is better balanced than base game Wingspan, but it seems like it might be, which would make sense because it's been 5 years of the game at this point.
Yeah.
I like it. It's still just a play for me.
Sure.
A higher play. Like, if you're going to rate it or something, it might go from, like, a 7.5 to a 7.9 or a 7 to a 7.5. But it's not significantly different enough where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is now amazing and everybody should own it. It's good. If you're not big on the bird theme, check out the dragons. If you really, really love Wingspan and want some variability, this is a variable version of that.
Sure.
So, Wormspan.
I agree. I think the years that they've had to kind of contemplate Wingspan, and especially all of its expansions, when they decided to create Wormspan, again, about dragons, they certainly took some of that feedback to heart, because the cards themselves have a lot of deliberate additional text and coloring to help guide you through, you know, scoring or active abilities and such. Whereas Wingspan was like, hey, you know, check out the birds. If it has a body part in it, it scores points, or a color, or if it happens to be, you know, this size versus this size or below this particular number. The dragons here, you know, hatchling, small, medium, large. Okay. It's got a color band on the card to tell you what type of dragon. It's helpful. It's aggressive, things like that. Shy, so that you can do certain combos or scoring, things like that. So the text on the card is better.
That is true. Yeah.
And more understandable, and, you know, vision. In some cases, the graphic design, the visual appeal of it, you put the card, it's understand. We didn't have to go to the rule book. I think, remember playing Wingspan, like, well, how does it, you know, what does it mean by, you know, this particular size, but also how does this other card work off of it? So I think they did a great job really streamlining the cards and the deck actions. Like you mentioned, I don't remember seeing anybody who came across a crazy combo. We played this game multiple times.
Right.
The combos were mostly like, I think I had one was like, if you have a shy dragon orthogonal to this one, you score an additional point. Or if you complete the cave, you score some additional points. Nothing too crazy. Nothing combo-rific, so to speak. It was more along the lines of like, this will give you points, or this will activate in certain conditions, or give you some sort of resources or particular actions. And obviously the explorer in Wingspan, basically when you play to a row, when you activate a row and get that special ability, you're also activating all the cards. Here, you have to pay a little more attention based on, does your card have a special spot for your explorer to land on to activate a particular ability? So, I don't know. It's six of this, half a dozen of the other. I don't know which one I in particular like better. I do like, I think I like Wingspan's activation a little bit better, because I just like the fact that it just all activates. There's no thought behind it. When you play Wormspan, in between the cards, you gain resources or cards, or you get to move on a certain particular track. But you have to make sure that you have a cave and a dragon in that particular portion to be able to move to the next resource. So a couple of times I was like, oh, I have the caves out here. And again, cards on a flat board, they kind of slide a bit. And you're like, oh, I don't see the red stop sign here. I can continue to move. Oh, wait a minute. There's not a dragon card there. And the dragon cards kind of blend into the board. And weirdly enough, there are three different color caves, and the additional cave cards that you can put in the cave, the colors don't need to match to go into the particular caves. So I think there was a little bit of just visual challenge and confusion, just because, like, they try to be very particular this time about how showing how things activated, and again, showing about the cards. I do think that they lost something as far as, again, the visual appeal. It wasn't at the board didn't look as clean. It didn't look like this is a landscape. These are birds in a landscape. It was like, this is a cave that has all different color caverns. And these are dragons with a ton of text on them and a ton of symbols. So it didn't lend itself to that thematic immersion that you were in this amazing world. It was more like, here's a lot of text, here's a lot of symbols, here's a lot of things in between the cards, so that it's easily playable. Where Wingspan, you have to know coming into it, when you activate a row, you get the special ability, and then you move from right to left and activate those cards. Like, you have to know those things. Here, it's pretty straightforward. So it's a little bit like this and a little bit like that. I did miss the big combos that you were mentioning. You know, I didn't have a combo that was like, oh man, I'm going to go this and this and this, and it's going to blow up. It's going to be great. But again, it made things a little more fair. So it's not bad. It's good. But it's very basic. It's very, it's not offensive. It's a nice glass of water. It's good. You know, I love dragons. Big fan of dragons. For me, this is a play, but probably a little bit lower for me on the play scale than you, Anthony. I think it's like, it's fine. I have some Wingspan. I don't think I need this because I have this mechanic already. If I didn't have Wingspan, I probably would pick this up because it's like that kind of particular game that could play with a whole bunch of people. People who are interested in more light games. And I like the dragon, you know, that whole kind of aspect a lot more. And the eggs didn't seem to be that hard. So it was a lot lighter and looser as far as resources were concerned. You were always getting resources, almost always were able to kind of put your dragons out, again, based on what was available. So it's a play. It's a little bit lower of a play. I think it's fine.
Yeah. 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 I'm not far off from that.
Yeah.
It's. The thing I like about this, and the thing I always liked about Wingspan, is that you can teach the game in like 5 minutes.
Yes.
Like, we sat down with Will the last time we played yesterday, and I was like, you play Wingspan? He's like, oh yeah, a while ago. And I'm like, okay, cool. And it's ran through all the rules. It took like 5-6 minutes. And he's like, cool, I'm good. And that was it. That's all it took.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you're playing with somebody who's never played any of these before, or who's like, doesn't play as many games, you spend a little more time, show some of the cards. It's three actions and then a few things you need to know, and that's it. And that makes it really accessible. But Wingspan is also that. It just has harder to read cards. So I'm not sure that's that different in that regard.
Sure. And again, it comes down to having a very large deck, and either you get what you need or you don't get what you need.
Right.
I was surprised they didn't expand that market of cards to at least 4 or 5.
Yeah, me too. I wonder what balance issue that is.
Because it's honestly, to be fair, it's just not fun pulling blindly from a deck.
No.
I mean, it's a lot more fun if you see the card that you want and then and hopefully it gets around to you and you're able to pull it instead of like, and a card, this doesn't work. And a card, this doesn't work. Just like,
right.
I'm not liking that.
Yeah. And it's always the same. I get to the end of the game and I go like, oh, I draw 6 cards. It was like, give me 6 off the top of the deck. I don't care. I don't want to. I don't have a half an hour to dig through all this. I don't care.
That's 100% true. So yeah, Wormspan. It's good.
It's good.
It's good. Yeah, it's probably a better tone. It's good.
Yeah.
Bring it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I got to play 2 light games, some stuff on the party side. First up is Glitch Squad that came out this year. Mary Flanagan, Max Seideman. This is all about trying, you know, being a forensic team called Glitch Squad. And you're on a mission to analyze various crime scenes. Now, the challenge happens to be that all of your efforts to figure out what this crime scene might be comes down to Glitch the Cat, who gets in the way and messes things up. Now, in each round, this practically comes down to the fact that you have a little wooden board that's going to have your clues on it, and you get a secret word that you have to work off. So the secret word could be rolling pin. Great. So I have 3 one-word clues I could put in there. So I could put baker, I could put dough, and then on the last one, there is typically going to be a letter already put there for the first letter in that particular word. So now I have to find something that fits. So if it was a C, cookies. Cookies works with rolling pin. I fold it up and I hand it to my opponent. Now my opponent opens it up and chooses one of the three words to erase with this dry erase marker and then fills in a word that they think with a combination of other words there will trick my teammate into guessing something different than rolling pin. And that's primarily the main part of the game. Hopefully your teammate gets the word. And if they do, you get to pull out this very large card from this hidden sleeve. And it's going to give you more and more letters. It's going to reveal more and more letters that is going to be based upon a particular word that you're trying to guess. You don't need to reveal all the letters. You can guess what the word is, which again is separate than the clues that you're giving out in the game. So typically, a lot of these evidence, quote unquote, are going to be connected to either a location, a weapon, an occupation, or a hobby. This is probably where the game lets down a little bit because it's not very specific. So when you say location, you're going to be surprised by the number of weird things that are considered location. Same thing with weapons, occupation, or hobby. For one example, when I was working with my teammate, we had to go through the weapon cards, and I got rebarb. Rebarb. Who thinks of rebarb as a weapon? Who knows what rebarb is? I don't know. I knew it. My teammate had no idea what rebarb was. It's not really a weapon. And again, a lot of these secret word cards that relate to these things don't really make too much sense. And again, the final word that you're trying to guess to win the game also doesn't really make much sense, as in it's not connected to the larger story. So can you decipher based upon the clues? Maybe. And then you can get the password to the evidence locker. I don't know why this cat is messing with a forensic science team. A cat shouldn't be in the forensic science lab at all. I enjoyed getting my word and trying to come up with three word clues to give to my teammate, especially when I got a little bit challenged with the particular letter there. I really enjoyed messing with my opponent to figure out the right word that would send their team astray. The clues themselves were not fun and or interesting. It didn't really lead anywhere. It didn't lead to like solving a mystery or a particular criminal. So I'm not really sure why they went with the forensic science team kind of thing. It doesn't really match with the particular gameplay. The cat thing is fine. The production is quite good. But I'm going to be honest, if you're going to play Glitch Squad, it's probably going to be, it's a hard line here, but I'm probably going to give it a dodge. I just don't think that enough of the elements come together to recommend it. It's fine. It's fun-ish. And I don't know. It's a little party game. Next up is another little small game. It's called Kites. It came out 2022. And of course, it's all about kites. Now, what's interesting about this game, what initially drew me was the artist Beth Sobel. This was the designer Kevin Pomino. And basically what we're looking at here is the concept of keeping the kites in the sky. Beautiful kites. Beth Sobel artwork is amazing as always. And I was like, I love this artwork. Let's play this game. And they're like, great. It's a small game. We can play quickly. There are six sand timers. And each of the sand timers relates to one of the kites that's in flight. And when the sand runs out, the kite hits the ground. And basically the game is over. But the five colors here each represent one of the different kites. But each of them has a different amount of sand in there. So what you're looking at is like the red one, for example, is going to be the shortest one possible, so 30 seconds. And the orange one is 45 seconds. And then the white one's 60 seconds. And then the purple one is 90 seconds. So you also have to keep in mind that they're going to run out at different rates. How you stop them from running out is by flipping them back over to run the sand the other way. So you want the sand to almost run out and then flip it. You do that by playing cards from your hand that has pictures of different kites. And the symbols on the kites show you which of these sand timers you must flip over. Now, if you have one symbol, you can also flip over the white sand timer, which is also good because at towards the end of the game, the cards in the middle are going to run out. So if you've done a very good job with this live action, fast-paced game, you should keep all the sand timers going. Once the deck runs out, you can't turn over the white sand timer any longer. So whatever it's at, that's where it is. And everyone has to play their cards as quickly as possible to beat that white sand timer. Kites Time to Fly. It's a good filler game. And I mean a filler game. This is a 10 to 15 minute game once you know it. Once you get over the initial panic of having to play cards and not panic and accidentally hit one of those sand timers. So Kites gets a very, very light play. I think it's something that you could keep almost in your pocket, especially in your bag, and you could be like, I got a quick game, 15 minutes, let's play it. It's not a game that you're going to get a lot of table time on, but I think it's an interesting concept with the sand timers and something we haven't seen typically.
Yeah, that one sounds interesting.
Yeah. All right, so that's everything that hit our table this week. Anthony, now on to our feature review. So our feature review this week is our friend ChatGPT is joining us at the table, and they want to pitch us some board games. So Anthony ran some prompts, some famous game designers through ChatGPT, and said, hey, let's design a game.
I did. Yeah, so we're going to play a little game of our own, and I'm going to read off part of what ChatGPT spits back, because for each of these, it gave about 1,500 words or so of overview, objective, list of components, setup, gameplay summary, and unique features, sometimes a conclusion as well. I'm not going to read all that because that wouldn't be fun for anybody. but I'm going to go over the brief overview and the unique features, and all of these have those two things. And Chris, you're going to have to try to guess what the prompt was for this particular game.
And I think we should also mention before we get started that Board Gamers Anonymous does not recommend developing board games through ChatGPT.
No, this is satire. So
100%.
Yeah, the best satire is when I have to tell you this is satire. all right, let's do it.
All right.
First up, we've got a game called War of the Divines.
Ooh.
War of the Divines is a strategic area control and conflict resolution board game set in a mythological world where powerful gods vie for dominance over the mortal realm. Players take on the role of these gods, each with unique powers and abilities, as they muster armies, forge alliances, and scheme to outmaneuver their rivals. Now, the unique features of this game are an alliance system. Players can forge temporary alliances to take down stronger opponents. Evolving powers. Divine power cards can be upgraded or swapped out during the game.
Uh-huh.
Legendary artifacts. Discover and wield powerful artifacts that can turn the tide of battle. Mythical creatures. Summon mythical beasts and creatures to aid in your conquest. Mm. And divine wrath. Invoke devastating divine wrath upon your foes, unleashing cataclysmic events on the board.
Okay. Weirdly enough, I gotta admit, I kind of like this idea. I kind of like this game.
Yeah, for good reason, I would imagine.
Oh, man. So we got a lot of battling at the table. So it's a lot of troops on the map. We got some alliances. We got a lot of special powers and abilities. Gods, of course. Big, giant creatures and such. Who could that be? Who could that be? How about Eric Lang?
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it, sir. Yes. This one reads as like a generic, this is like store brand Eric Lang, right? So the prompt here, and a lot of these are similar, is outline a new board game based on the common mechanics in Eric Lang's games.
Sure.
Examples include Blood Rage, Rising Sun, Ankh, and Chaos in the Old World.
I could see that. Sure.
All right. And that's it. That's all I told ChatGPT, and everything I read to you is what it spat back at me, plus another 1,000 words of other stuff.
Wow. So, crazy.
This tool's crazy. All right. Next up, we have Harvest Haven.
Oh.
Harvest Haven is a strategic board game where players take on the roles of farmers building and managing their homesteads.
Mm-hmm.
Players will compete to cultivate crops, raise livestock, expand their properties, and earn the most prosperous and diverse farm. Features. You will balance resource gathering while building construction and expansion. Plan ahead for seasonal activities like planting, harvesting, and breeding. Choose the right combination of buildings and workers to maximize efficiency. Adapt to changing conditions and events through action cards. And complete strategic land management to optimize crop yields and livestock pastures.
Oh, okay. Well, it's farming. And there's a lot of good Euro farming games out there. Who could it be? Uwe Rosenberg?
You are correct, sir.
There you go. Yeah. The man knows his misery farming.
Yeah, this one might be the easiest because I was like, oh, Uwe Rosenberg. Give me an Uwe Rosenberg game. And I'm like, it's just going to be a generic farming game.
It's got to be farming.
A generic farming game. all right, next up. This one's a little more interesting. So I'll just give you one hint up front. This is for a publisher and not a designer.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it is titled Chrono Clash Battle for Eternity.
Oh, boy.
All right. Chrono Clash is a strategic board game that combines elements of deck building, area control, and time manipulation. Players take on the roles of powerful chrono mages, manipulating time itself to gain the upper hand in a battle for control over the Eternity Nexus, a mystical source of unlimited power. Chrono Clash offers a mix of strategic depth, tactical decision-making, and dynamic gameplay as players compete to control the powerful Eternity Nexus. Time manipulation adds a unique twist, allowing for unpredictable shifts in the game's flow and ensuring every game is a thrilling battle for supremacy. So, every Chrono Mage has a unique deck with spells and abilities. There are multiple expansions that come with the game, including new mages, spells, and board modules. The board setup is modular itself, and there's a randomized crystal shard deck for each game to make sure they're all unique.
Huh. Well, who could it be? Who could it be? I'm thinking of two. Could it be Monolith, but I'm going to go with Seamon.
That's a good guess. It is a good guess. It is not Seamon.
Okay. Monolith?
No, but another good guess. It's one of those companies, though.
It's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff to play the same basic game.
Well, all right. I guess if it's a lot of stuff to play a basic game, Fantasy Flight?
That's interesting. No. So it's Awaken Realms.
Awaken Realms. It didn't hit the miniatures hard enough for me.
It didn't. Yeah, that was the interesting thing. For whatever reason, ChatGPT did not pick up on Awaken Realms as miniatures.
Oh, man.
It's card-based.
That's what threw me. Because the LCG elements for like Fantasy Flight or even Seamon does a lot of stuff like that, too.
Yeah, like all the proper nouns, perfect. That's Awaken Realms. But where are the miniatures?
That's, man, you got me there.
Yeah. Good job, ChatGPT.
Damn you, ChatGPT!
All right. Next up, we have the Guilds of Nuremberg.
Okay.
In Guilds of Nuremberg, players take on the roles of influential guild leaders in the bustling medieval city of Nuremberg. Through strategic tile placement, resource management, and the development of influential connections, players compete to build the most prosperous guild and earn the favor of the city's elite. Key features include tile placement. Players must carefully place guild tiles on their boards to maximize their benefits. Resource management. Acquiring and managing resource efficiently is crucial for constructing buildings and fulfilling city demands. City influence. Gain the favor of the city's elite by strategically placing influence markers and fulfilling their demands. Guild specialties. Each guild tile offers unique abilities, encouraging players to develop different strategies. Worker placement. Use worker meeples to take actions, compete for key spots, and gain advantage in resource gathering and construction. What designer does ChatGPT think would make this game?
It's interesting that the tile thing throws me, because tiles, along with economic development, who can it be? It seems to be like a lot of different elements. I'm going to go Feld, Stefan Feld.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, the tile thing threw me because I'm trying to remember. I think maybe, was it one of his castle games has tiles. Not Castles of Burgundy, but one of them was Tuscany.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of his games have tiles if you think about it. But even Burgundy, that's just tiles.
Yeah.
Little hex tiles.
It's true. I'm thinking terrain is what I'm going with on that. Okay. Right. Great. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, you got it. Nice. All right. Crew's in here. You got 3 for 4. All right. This next one is not a designer in particular. Okay. It is a influences of this game. So I fed into the system several different games within this genre. Try to guess the genre and the games that I fed into the system.
Okay. Whoa.
Galactic Ascendancy.
Okay.
Galactic Ascendancy is a strategic board game set in a vast galaxy teeming with diverse alien races, ancient relics, and uncharted star systems. Players take on the role of ambitious leaders vying for dominance through exploration, expansion, exploitation, and extermination of rival civilizations. The game challenges players to navigate political intrigue, economic strategies, and tactical warfare to claim victory and secure their place as the supreme power in the galaxy. They don't have a feature section. I'm trying to skim this down. Galactic Ascendancy encourages players to adapt their strategies based on evolving galaxy conditions, form temporary alliances for mutual benefit while plotting betrayals for personal gain, balance economic growth with military might to maintain dominance, and navigate political landscapes to secure votes, enact laws, or trigger galaxy-wide events. What do you think? What's the genre of this game?
Well, I love the fact that it started out with these unique alien civilizations and these wondrous cities and artifacts, and then it went straight to, like, destruction. Yeah. I'm going to go with 4X.
Yeah, yeah. I just love where I punch in 4X, and then ChatGPT is like, let me spell that out for you. It's exploration, expansion, exploitation, extermination.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks, ChatGPT. PT, we appreciate that.
It kind of worries me that ChatGPT knows that.
I know, right? What about the games?
We're definitely talking some TI4.
Yep, that's one of them.
I think that's pretty strong in there. We're probably also thinking, what else? There's a lot of alliances. I don't know if that covers, I guess it covers mostly alliances. I guess also we're looking at Eclipse.
Yep.
And could be a little bit of Rebellion. Star Wars Rebellion, I'm thinking. Or let's see, what else in that kind of sci-fi epic genre? Rex has a lot of those alliances. Dune has a lot of those alliances that plays out like that. I don't know. What else am I missing?
It's a game for you, man. I threw it in there for you.
Underwear Cities? I don't know.
No, Star Trek Ascendancy.
Oh, Star Trek Ascendancy, the Alliances. Yeah, I get that.
And the title, Galactic Ascendancy.
Galactic Ascendancy. I overlooked that. I was thinking too deep on that.
Yeah, that was a good one. It's not super hard to guess, but it's a fun one to read. All right. Next up we have Empires of Influence.
Oh.
Empires of Influence is a strategic board game that combines elements from a variety of different genres. Set in a world of shifting allegiances and competing factions, players take on the roles of powerful leaders vying for control, influence, and prosperity. Each player represents a distinct faction with unique abilities, goals, and methods of achieving dominance. The game unfolds over a series of rounds, each presenting players with tough decisions that shape the course of history.
Ooh.
Right? Let's list this one. Victory conditions.
Yes.
Game ends after a set number of rounds or when a certain condition is met.
Okay.
Those particular conditions could be military dominance, control the most territories and win decisive conflicts, economic prosperity, amass the most wealth through trade and commerce, political influence, secure alliances, manipulate events, and control key positions of power, or cultural ascendancy, spread your faction's ideals and culture across the world. This is a game that offers strategic, deep strategic gameplay, dynamic player interactions, and emergent narratives. With its blend of area control, asymmetric factions, and political maneuvering, the game promises intense competition and endless replayability. What do you think?
Well, it's first off, we got some Scythe in there. No Scythe in there?
Yeah, and so just I didn't resituate this, but this is a designer.
Okay, so no Stegmaier?
Not Stegmaier, no.
Okay. So not Stegmaier. Some Bruna Cathala?
No, it's a good guess though.
Okay. Let me think. Who else has that kind of...
Yeah, I'll read this part again, just as a hint.
Sure.
It's a blend of area control, asymmetric factions, political maneuvering, and player-driven storytelling.
Player-driven storytelling. Simone Luciani?
Ooh. No, but it's a good guess.
Right, what is it?
It's Cole Worley.
Oh, Cole Worley, of course. All the Root stuff.
Yeah, it's basically all Root stuff.
All the coin games.
I listed all of his games, and it was just basically Root. It was like a genericized Root. This one's interesting, because this one kind of shows you, like, ChatGPT being like, I don't know, asymmetry and also factions?
Oh, yeah, I should have leaned on the asymmetry.
Yeah, it doesn't really know what to do with that.
I don't think anyone does, but Cole.
Yeah, right.
He's the only one who does.
Yeah. All right. This one is a fun one. I threw a wrench in here just for fun. Okay. Lunaris, colonizing the moon. In Lunaris, colonizing the moon, players take on the roles of competing corporations striving to establish the most successful lunar colony. Inspired by the intricate strategy and depth of heavy board games, this game combines resource management, worker placement, and strategic development as players navigate the challenge of lunar colonization. We have multiple game modes. Solo mode allows you to play against an automated lunar corporation, optimizing strategies against an AI opponent. There's an alliance mode. In a four-player game, two corporations can form temporary alliances, sharing benefits, but ultimately competing individually for victory. Lunaris offers a deep and strategic gaming experience, challenging players to balance resource management, long-term planning, and adapting to the unpredictable lunar environment. It's a race to establish the most successful colony on Earth, Satellite.
All right. Who could that be? Is it who?
Huh?
Is it a who?
It's a who.
Okay.
And then I threw the theme at it.
Okay.
It was like, what if this person made this type of
sure.
this theme?
Is this a Vitello Certa?
It is.
Yeah.
There you go. So I was like, give me a Vitello Certa game, but on the moon.
There you go. Love it. I play that.
Yeah. No, this is one of the ones I read. I'm like, that sounds fun. I'd play that.
Yeah.
All right. We got two more. Two more here. We'll wrap up. The Age of Progress City Builders.
Okay.
Age of Progress City Builders is a strategic board game set in a bustling metropolis during an era of rapid industrialization. Players take on the roles of visionary architects, city planners, and entrepreneurs competing to develop the most prosperous and efficient city. This game offers strategic depth and variable game mechanics. Players will navigate through the complexities of urban planning, resource management, and technological advancement to claim victory. Let's see what's helpful here. Game mechanics. You have city building and zoning. You will be expanding your city strategically by placing different tiles on your player board. Resource management. You have to manage different resources like energy, materials, and money to build stuff. Technological advancements, research and invest in technologies to unlock powerful abilities and upgrades. Economic competition, compete with rivals for lucrative contracts, investments, and city projects. And victory conditions are victory points through successful city planning, resource management, and achievements. You also get points for population growth, cultural landmarks, economic prosperity, and technological milestones.
Gotcha. And this is a who. We're going with a who here.
This one is a direct who.
Okay.
Straight up who.
Well, city planning, there's a bunch. It's a bunch for that. And some of the scoring elements. We're not talking Ted Allspach, right? We're not going suburbia there?
No.
How about a Vladimir Suchy?
No, but it does sound like a Suchy game.
Yeah.
I was actually a little surprised by this one.
Let's see. Like,
with what ChatGPT pulled out.
That kind of stuff with the... How about... Ooh. Tertzi?
Oh, no, that's another good guess.
Yeah, who was it?
It's Friedman Freeze.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But see, so no. You got to have the FF in the title.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's his thing. He does that thing.
It got several things wrong here. It's like, it's missing the FF in the title.
Yeah.
It also took from Power Grid, and it's like, oh, okay, urbanization.
Yeah.
Infrastructure.
I get that. Like, it's good.
I guess, but that's not really what all his games are.
No.
And not all of his games are that. So I feel like a lot of these are just like amalgamations of the most common games. This one is just like Power Grid, but more?
You know, Power Grid, but more. It's, yeah.
Power Grid, but more.
Yes.
All right. This last one is an expansion.
Oh.
So I'm not going to read the title because that would just tell you.
There you go.
This expansion introduces a new mechanic called Outposts that streamlines gameplay and adds exciting strategic decisions. Players will establish outposts at various locations, unlocking unique benefits and bonuses. Additionally, this expansion includes new corporations, project cards, and milestones. The outposts represent permanent settlements, allowing players to establish a presence in key locations. Each player begins the game with a limited number of outpost tokens. When you place them, they allow you to increase production, gain special bonuses, set up trade hubs, set up science stations, increase fuel capacity, or increase the amount of income you get when placed next to other tiles. I have edited this slightly because some of the names of things would just tell you what game this is.
Sure.
What game do you think this is?
Thinking of two. Could it be Terraforming Mars?
It is, yeah! Terraforming Mars. The Terraforming Mars Frontier expansion, in which you would place these asymmetrical outposts onto the map that give you benefits based on their placement, which I think actually sounds kind of cool.
It sounds a lot better than some of the expansions that came out. From it.
Right? Yeah. So the prompt I gave it was, give me a new expansion for Terraforming Mars that adds a new mechanic to the base game, but also streamlines gameplay while adding new interesting decisions. So new stuff, but shorter. That's what I told it. And this sounds like new stuff, but shorter.
It also didn't put public random artwork for its cards.
And now that we've done this, I'm sure Frickscape's going to be like, ooh, interesting output.
Oh, no. What have we done? Oh, that was great.
Yeah, that was fun. You got like most of those. That's like 6 or 7 out of 9. That was good.
That's pretty great. And that was a lot of fun. And again, it's shocking and surprising what AI can do. And I guess a lot of the designers iterate on their previous design. So it's not so hard to kind of put two and two together because that's what they do, so to speak. But it's kind of scary because
yeah,
these people are geniuses, they're alchemists, they're artisans, and just amazing designers, and then like a computer program's like, yeah, blah 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 blah, it's a thing now. And I'm like, I probably would have played that. Oh no.
Yeah. Now, would it be good? That's still up to the designer. But the ideas, yeah, it's crazy. And honestly, it shows you how much ideas are already just like throwing stuff in a blender.
Sure.
Because all ChatGPT is throwing stuff in a blender. That's all it is.
Sure.
It's just the blender is taking from the entire internet, so there's like 4 million ingredients in there. I would find it interesting though, like some of the things that it genericized, right, and some of the things it misunderstood, like Friedman Freeze, ChatGPT completely misunderstood.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, Uwe Rosenberg, it's like, yeah, you farm stuff and you build stuff and you have to balance that. Like, yep, that's Rosenberg.
100%. Well, that was a lot of fun.
Yep.
All right, everyone. So that's everything for this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.